The big sip.
All right, all right, all right. Hey, this is Gabriela with you from The Big Sip. Oh my goodness. I am so excited to dive into the guest of the hour today. We are switching over. We are now focusing on the entire culinary world, and I could not kick off this segment, this entire culinary world segment, without first being able to spotlight an incredible individual who has been a part of the Napa Valley culinary scene for years, has done incredible work to work for phenomenal Michelin star rated restaurants, and is just an overall really good human and friend. And so I'm really excited for all of you to sip from his cup. I'm talking about no one else than Chef Sean Street, executive chef for the Gravity Tavern over out in Mill Valley. How's it going, my friend?
Oh, it's going good. Going good. Staying busy.
The chef life keeps you busy.
Yes, yes, definitely. Definitely. It's like there's always something new going on.
Oh my gosh. Always. Yeah, like you are now at the Gravity Tavern. Last time I saw you, it was several years ago, probably. It was celebrating my birthday, and I was out at Farm, and that was the last location that you were out. Phenomenal restaurant.
Thank you.
Also, really cool showcase, the incredible talent and skills that you have as a chef. Just presentation-wise, I'm like, wow. Like,
yes, yes. The team at Farm or Carneros in Hull, I mean, I think I was overseeing three of the restaurants there. But the base being Farm, we had a great team there, great support team there.
Look at you. I'm over here trying to spotlight you, and he's like, the team.
What? You know what it is? I've always spoke about the team in culinary, and now that I've stepped into the role of executive chef out there in Mill Valley, it's true to the T.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Oh my goodness, you can't do it alone.
No, and that's from, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not in the culinary space, but I'm assuming that's from back of house all the way to front of house. Everybody needs to be putting their best foot forward in order to make it a well-oiled machine.
Definitely, working towards the same goal. It just has to be the constant communication and speaking amongst each other with regards to what it is that, I guess, each person or each individual wants out of their career. So it's kind of, you know, everybody has to like come to the same point just to deliver to the guests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be in those shoes and to be guiding all of these individuals that you're in this role?
Oh my goodness. I've made ripples in a few of the places where I've gone. And I thought I had the answers, you know, even though I would still say it's about the team, I'd put myself out there and make people know that I felt that I was better than X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm. But your skills speak for that. Flavor, presentation.
Yeah.
Like, you are one phenomenal chef. I think out of all of the chefs that I know, and don't get me wrong, there's not too many, but even if I did know a boatload of chefs, I have never met someone with the amount of talent that you bring to the table. And that's talent as well as just how you choose to lead yourself, how you approach people. Like, you are just such a kind-hearted individual. You're always looking for ways to, I mean, you literally kicked off the segment talking about the team. Like, you are super selfless. You know your skill. You know what you bring to the table. But you've always given me the sense that it's everything that's happening around you that you value and think of that being as important, as opposed to you primarily being that spotlight.
Yes, it's that self-accountability. That's really what I put forth.
Well, that's amazing, and I'm happy that we're here spending the next hour or so spotlighting you, because you absolutely deserve it.
Thank you.
You've had a journey in this culinary space, and I am so excited to dive into your cup and just learn what has that been like, you know, migrating here, coming from Jamaica of all places, and you infuse that through your culinary cuisine, but you make it your own. Walk me through just what it's been like, what the journey's been like now that you are officially the executive chef.
Boy, I mean, find myself, you know, I don't know if I'm living out my life or if I'm trying to show the end result of my parents' struggle, or what's the worst word? Not struggle, but their commitment to family and that type of thing. So I kind of find myself out, you know, every day you're trying to figure it out. But I've seen to where I've folded what my mother's taught me, what my grandmother's taught me, into my direction as far as flavor profiles and just goodness, life experiences. I find myself right now I look at it more as an artistic approach, to where I'm incorporating, you know, life experience into my plate or into my execution of the plates.
Yeah. What life experiences come to mind when you talk about that?
Oh goodness. parents coming here without anything when I was one. You know, a few families living with my uncle in the South Bay. Mm-hmm. My uncle was one of the first of the West Indian family, the Trinidadian side, to make it to the West Coast, which is, you know, it's a big thing to get this far. After that, going into a small apartment, then seeing how my parents went from the small apartment to the next house, and then they used that house to get the next house, and just watching how their sacrifice is the word, seeing how they've sacrificed working one and two jobs each, still going to school, still trying to make better for the children that were, our first generation West Indians out here, just trying to figure it out as well, trying to deal with the acceptance of your back home in Jamaica versus the acceptance of the people here in the States. So it's like a hopscotch in your head, trying to find that lane. Like fast forwarding to like my career, I've noticed myself having to kind of not manipulate the lane, but kind of try to find my way. Working in Napa Valley, it's very competitive. I love it more than
competition.
The competition, the culture, the kitchen culture.
What's the kitchen culture like?
The kitchen culture, it's about excellence. It's about executing. A lot of times, it's hard to explain to people. Like, what is it that drives me preparing a dish or making a dish? It's I get off more on the execution of the dish. Did I do it right? Versus everything else that follows behind. That's like the first thing. It's the execution. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I learned with, say, coming back to California after I went back home to Jamaica. Coming back to California and working for Thomas Keller, Chef Tessier. Wow. It's about the execution. And with the execution comes everything else. Comes the gratitude. Comes the... Everything else. Yes.
That is amazing. So execution is the number one thing that you always love to focus on, knowing that is what's most important for you in the kitchen.
Yes, and that umbrellas a lot of things. It envelops flavor. You're always looking for the guest reaction. So for example, like when I was sending out dishes, I'm sitting there like looking, or I'm asking the guest.
Lurking around the corner.
Well, and then say if the plates come back to the kitchen, you're stopping the wait staff, and you're like, wait, what's left on the plate? And that's like the constant. You're looking for that immediate reaction from your guest or
to see how it all played down.
Yeah, definitely. It's a focus that you can't really. I'm not sure about other industries, but it's something that's what we're looking at.
And I can tell that you bring this sort of competitive, let me show you how I am the greatest in your own lane. And I love that about you. Where did that come from? Like, why cooking? Like, who instilled that in you? You mentioned your mother and your grandmother. Did you cook with them growing up? Or what led you to really feeling like this was your path, your calling?
Strange, because like I mean growing up, everyone had always said, oh, okay, Shania, are you gonna cook, are you cooking today, or what are you cooking today, what are you cooking with your mom, what are you cooking with granny,
because it was something that you did, or yeah, or people just expected
I was,
you to
no, I was granny's favorite. I was amongst all the cousins. I'm just gonna put that out there. Granny's favorite, so I was always with her, and she was always with me. We traveled, we cooked together, we did everything together. So was my mom. My mother's doing her working multiple jobs and stuff. So granny's favorite, we cooked all the time. So my familiarity with how to manipulate ingredients came from both my mom and my granny. The love for cooking came from the both of them, amongst other aunties as well. Other aunties, like everyone had their own niche, right? Mm-hmm. Between that, going back and forth to Jamaica as a child, I'm not sure what it was that grabbed me, but people always reminded me by way of asking me, like, are you cooking today, or what are you cooking this weekend, or as I got a little older, are you cooking, we're gonna come over. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't see what the because my family was like so insulated. I didn't, we didn't eat, or we didn't have like friends. It was always cousins. Mm-hmm. Everybody that migrated here, it was just cousins. We never saw like friends was far and wide.
Family were your friends.
Oh my God. Like I remember the first time that I had like the sliced American cheese. It blew me away. We always had like the cheese that you'd slice off the block. And I remember one time my mom telling me that I couldn't go back over to one of the neighbor's house across the street, my friend's house. And she said, their parents said that you can't come over anymore, or only for a certain amount of time. And the reason being is that like he ate this like turkey and American cheese sandwich and like he shared one with me, and then I kept on eating more and more and more. So I guess I cleared out all of their American cheese. I didn't realize, because I was like, what is this?
Is this craft single discovery that I've made?
And that's just like right before like my, that's like right before like preteen. So I was like, well, what is this? It's just crazy. But going back to the question, it's like, I think it's just being around my granny and my mom. They always seen them create from scratch, doing like the Jamaican patties. My mom would do it, even though she's like the Trinidadian, it's a Jamaican dish. For her to do it from start to finish over like a 2-3 day period was very intriguing to me. You know, I'd veered away from it and kind of, you know, got caught up in the rat race. As I got older, like out of school, I went towards accounting, business, went further into real estate, had the bubble. And I was like, you know, there was the real estate bubble, I think 06, 07. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what, you have to figure out what it is that you want to do outside of just chasing the money.
Yeah. And do you feel like you were navigating all those other spaces because of what you said earlier, which was, as a first generation American, constantly feeling like you're balancing, am I doing this because there's this unspoken pressure of having to be excellent because of the sacrifices that your parents made to give you that life? Or am I chasing this because it's genuinely what I want and what's going to fulfill me?
That's, you know, that I think that's a great way of saying it, because I've never felt that from my parents. But I always looked at the outside influence, but maybe from the uncles and the aunties, may have mentioned things like that. And there's always, I mean, if you're West Indian, you have to be an attorney, professor. And there's like three things that you can be. You can't be anything else.
Anything else.
So I think that's also what played into the fact that I kind of ran, maybe I may have ran away from the cooking thing, because it's like there was no prestige in it.
At least from your family instilled in you on possible career opportunities.
Yes, yes, yes.
Interesting, because then you come to Napa and everyone's like, oh, wow. Ooh,
right. I'm like, wow, this is regular. I mean, like my father, I mean, like towards, as I got older, I mean, my father was the one that cooked, you know, most of the time in the household. I had stepped away from it. So after the real estate bubble, I was like, you know what, Shani, you have to figure out what is it that you want to do or what you love to do. My family had always had like a little side business whereas they'd have like a booth at most of the local fairs and events around the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And so I'd go help, though most of the family would go help. And it was the name of it was The Taste of the Caribbean. And they had a great following, but then they ended up relocating to the Miami area, just as most of the family, you know, picked up and left California eventually. So I came back, I was like, you know what is it that you want to do? I was into this whole like Into the Wild thing. Have you ever seen the movie Into the Wild? The guy, he wants to just go to Alaska and he just wants to get away from the rat race. So that's that's where my mindset was. I was like, I need to find peace. I need to find calm. I need to love what it is that I'm doing instead of just chasing the money, which was easy during that time in real estate.
Yeah.
I was like,
midlife crisis kind of moment.
Oh man. I didn't even go there with it. It was just like, yeah, I mean, I was like, you know,
self-discovery.
I was in real estate life. It was like, I tell people it was like drug money. I had like 8 properties in Vegas every 3 weeks.
Wow.
Flying wherever I wanted every other week beyond, you know, in between that. So yeah. it was different. It was
but
different.
Fulfillment but, wise yeah, in was, your heart, it was.
No, I had $12,000 in mortgages every month. I had $2,500 in car payments every month. It was foolish. I was just chasing because the money was just coming. Mm-hmm. So when that started coming to an end, I was like, you need to figure out what you're going to do. I ended up picking up, moving to Miami.
Oh, that's a nice location.
I know, right?
I'm like, not a bad place to go.
to retreat to, right? That is the like, American playground.
I'm like, I've never been there, but I've heard it's a location I must go to.
It's one big rap video.
One big rap video.
it's everything.
See,
that you
I look
everything.
At that and I'm just like, wow. I traveled to Cuba 2 years ago. Uh-huh. I always want to say last year, and I'm like, last year was canceled. Nothing happened last year. I'm just like, right? But it's, you think about that cultura and just the music and the influence that it brings in the food. And so I, even though I've never been to Miami, I feel like if I were to go there, I would somehow feel at home.
Yes.
Because of that feeling that I got when I was in Cuba and just seeing people infusing all of these different cultures coming together through food, through music, through art, through all of it.
Yeah, Cuba. I went there. I would say a couple years ago, but it may have been about 4 or 5 years ago when they opened up for a moment. Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing, and it reminded me of Jamaica when I was a youth. It was rustic. It was real. It was an amazing experience.
I love that. I love that. So you retreated to Miami.
Yeah, retreated to Miami, and I was on my Into the Wild binge. I think I had my a DVR or whatever set to like Into the Wild. I had it recorded, and so I'm just, that's all I'm watching day and night.
Replay.
I'm like
trying to figure out what kind of clue.
But I'm like, I'm gonna go to Jamaica. I'm gonna go back home. Went to Miami, and during that time, I think it was like Spirit was flying, like doing like those 25-cent return flights. So I was at one point going back home to Jamaica every 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh wow!
It was because it's different from, you know, the accessibility from Miami to the Caribbean versus being on the West Coast is completely different.
Right.
So I was there constantly, and then I was like, you know what? I'm into the wild. I'm going home. I went back home. But while I was in Miami, that's when I was like, okay, let me use the last of my money that I had to go just put myself through culinary school. I put myself through the culinary school, did my externship back in Jamaica, and I was like, that's where I'm going to be. I came back because my father was diagnosed with cancer. And that's when I was like, I'm back in Florida and I'm staying with them for a little bit just to see him through his stages. He's a strong man, worked his way through it. And then, you know, they're kind of like, give me that nudge. Like, it's time to go, Sean. It's time to go. But at that time I'm working for one of the nicer hotels in St. Augustine, 95 Cordova. Under Chef Dewan Roy. And then I remember there was one time where I went on a little vacation. I needed like a week and a half off or a week off. I said, okay, I'll, you know, approve
Chicago the, Bulls scene. I'm going to just go to Vegas for the night and then come back. I'm just kidding.
I actually had an externship set up back here in California.
Oh.
At Bouchon.
Oh.
Not externship, like, this is the externship. So I went there, came back for 3 days. Chef Tessier was like, you know, we'll give you a call. I think when I got back to Florida a few days later, he gave me the call. He's like, will you come back? I'm like, you know, will you like to work with us? I was like, yeah.
Yeah. No yeah. questions asked.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Get me back to Cali. Biggie.
and I swore off Cali because again, my mind state was just like, you know, into the wild and out of the rat race.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go chase that and figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. So I came back in the different industry, thought I was a badass.
Badass.
I was like Lee Lyon Cook, you know, over there at 95 Cordova, and I'm like, I'm going to come go over here and just run circles around these guys. No, they had a different story for you. Michelin is a different story.
Michelin is a whole other ball game.
Oh my goodness, I couldn't. Yeah, yeah, and especially Michelin one star, you're breaking all the bad habits from all these guys coming in trying to succeed. But as far as, I'm not sure if as a West Indian, there's a lot of West Indian culture, from what I've seen, is like there's this instilled cockiness that they kind of. I don't say more the Trinidadian side. I might get in trouble because the Jamaicans and Trinidadians are always headbutting. But there's this cockiness that's kind of instilled in you, and you have to produce otherwise. So I'm not sure if that's what got into me, because there's that confidence. I mean, you have the negatives and stuff, but there's a confidence that I guess that I had in me that to where I feel. Where I felt that I would withstand the pain longer than the next person. The person next to me, I would like, I'll make sure that I outdo the person next to me.
Yeah.
But not because I'm trying to outdo that person.
You're almost like, trying to test your own limits.
Yeah, yeah. So going back to when I said I made ripples in kitchens, I'm boisterous about what needs to be done. I'm like loud, like who would leave the camera on the floor, or the container on the floor. And I'm saying it like, what kind of idiot will leave the camera on the floor? That person shouldn't even be working in the industry. You need to go back to XYZ. And I say it just to kind of have people hold me accountable. It's like, oh, he's talking garbage. So we're gonna catch him doing this. But I kind of, but I do it to like lift myself. And I was like, oh, I have to be on my P's and Q's, right?
Because if I'm holding them accountable, then I gotta be accountable. Yeah,
exactly.
Lead by example.
And as you go up the ranks, definitely. Yeah, you fault one time, you're gonna hear about it for the rest of your career.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So has that gotten even more nerve wracking now that you're an executive chef?
Oh yeah. You know what? And again, being an executive chef is almost, it's coming up on a year now.
Congrats.
It's coming up. Thank you.
An early congrats.
Yeah,
cheers to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know it was a long work in the making. Yeah. We made it, fam. We here.
Right? Yes. But yeah, now, I mean, because until you just said that, it's like, yeah, now it's, yeah, I can see where, yeah, some of it would come back to bite me, because now, I mean, yeah, yeah.
He's over here just reminiscing in the chair, playing back all these scenarios. He's like, yeah.
Because inside my head, because like you have your guests that follow you from restaurant to restaurant, and they'll come, you know, they just want to support you. And then you have your former cooks. And there's one of my former cooks just came and dined the other day, but I wasn't aware of it.
At the Gravity?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I just, you know, I could, just, and I find myself filled with panic because I'm like, okay, I'm still the same person that was talking and stuff for the last 10 years. And this person just pops in on me without even not telling me that they're coming or anything like that. So I'm like, oh my God.
Do you take that as like a way of like, let's see what skills you got now?
Oh,
how does that make you feel? Or what were you so like, about?
Because, was this right? Was this right? Was this right? Was this right? Was this right?
Because you know they're going to be checking.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, and even though people know that you're the executive chef, your hands aren't always on the product now.
Right.
But you're still held just as accountable, mm-hmm. especially when it's one of your cooks that you used to just really have them refire something, you know, like, oh, well, why did you burn that? Or why does that look like that? Why was that seasoned? Throw it away, start over again. So if it's a person that you've always had your finger on like that.
Made you a little nervous.
Yeah, definitely.
And what,
definitely,
this person who walked in was someone that you were always picking on?
Not really picking on, but I was.
You held them accountable.
Stern. Yeah, yeah.
You were stern.
I was stern with the person. Not like, not crazy like, you know, a lot of in the restaurant, but one of those that it was just always a standoffish, but I wouldn't have any other conversation or rapport with otherwise. So it was always just one of those. Okay, if I walked upon the person, they always knew it was going to be something that's negative coming out of my mouth.
Constructive criticism.
That's
positive.
There it is. There it is.
And how did that experience end up going?
They said everything was well. Everything was good. You know, you still have your, you know, you just flash back like
your reservations.
You know what people, the standard that people hold you to.
Yeah.
And becoming an executive chef, you realize how much everything that you've said really has to be like
glue.
Yeah.
Stick to
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now you're in that position. You made it. And now you can't just all of a sudden be like, all right, cool, I'm letting go.
No. Because the people next to you may not have the same passion about it, or they may be there for another reason. They may not be there to execute. They may not be there to flavor the dishes properly. They may just want to be the robot, clock in, clock out.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just now a lot of the with COVID, you're dealing with a lot of having people that are just passing through.
You just really want some money.
Yeah. Just want some money temporarily until, you know, whatever happens next, mm-hmm. with them. So yeah. So that's another thing.
Even if those people do come in, you know, initially like that, you almost are in this unique position to also figure out, how can I potentially inspire this person? Like you are a vehicle of inspiration, and the accolades that you've earned throughout your lifetime are a testament to that for so many other people who maybe like you, you know, at first you're like, yeah, cooking's something that I do, but it's just kind of like, whatever.
Then
eventually it leads into, no, like this is something that I want to put my full on passion through. And your attitude behind the scenes leading that team could make it everything for that person.
That's true. That's very true. It's always about the people and what, you know, what it is that makes them tick. And that's something that I think I've always not advocated, like, look, kind of quietly in the kitchen, because in most kitchens, it's just like, oh, if this person is sad about something, just tell them to get out, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm usually speaking to people in their corners and just trying to just see what it is that they need out of the career.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, two of my best cooks are people that I moved from dishwashing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The passion and goodness. I'll have these cooks that are just out of high school dishwashers that are just out of high school trying to figure out life that are like running circles around these guys that have 15 and 20 years experience.
And just it's just because they're passionate.
They're just passionate. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's something that just blows me away every day.
And, I love that.
It's testament to like everybody, you know, everyone's dealing with their own thing and
100%.
wants what they want out of life. And these guys said that they want to learn. I'm like, yeah, whatever. You're dishwashing. You know, in the back of my head, I'm not saying this to them, but then put them on the line. These guys,
they want
to
learn. They're hungry.
Yeah.
They're curious.
Yeah. 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 So I have a couple of guys that are amazing.
That is so great.
Yeah.
That is so great. And it's just going to be a further testament to the phenomenal team that you're able to build now that you're in that position to do the damn thing.
Definitely. Definitely.
I know that there were some challenges getting to this position though. It's been a long time overdue. And I know that you would probably agree with me making that statement.
Definitely.
Walk me through and walk our listeners, people tuning in, through what led to, because farm amazing food, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to speak and say like, you probably had the best experience there because I don't know that. Definitely would love the opportunity to learn about what that looked like for you. But primarily, you know, that location and people talking about being able to work in Napa Valley and the prestige that comes with being an executive chef in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. Why then leave? And what are the challenges that you personally encountered in this space that made you feel like you had to leave?
Yeah. Without like pointing out like specific people, but my move to Carneros was one that like I was trying to map out my path to becoming an executive chef. That was something that was on the table when I chose to take that position and pass on other positions elsewhere. Eventually, that ended up not being an option as the years went by. I love Napa Valley. I love Napa Valley. I'd love to continue to work with the people here and you know, be amongst the wine and that's
all of the beauty it brings.
Oh yeah, definitely. The running through the various vineyards and grabbing my which greens would I get? I'll get pea shoots, favas. Thank you to the various vineyards. I'm not going to say who it was. The mustards, beautiful mustard season right now. It's just starting. I love everything about the whole organic approach to culinary and the arts. But working in Napa Valley, not only is it very competitive. I felt that I had my back turned on me as far as a few of the opportunities that I felt that I was more than capable of doing. Thus, making me have to navigate a certain way throughout the industry. Many people have asked me I've held the sous chef title, my path to executive chef. I've held the sous chef title at various properties, and I've had to position myself. They've been pushed up two steps. I'm not sure how to mm-hmm. really explain that.
Handed it.
But I've had to take. Maybe lateral movements in order to get myself to a position to where it's like, okay, you know, now you're marketable as an executive chef. Mm-hmm. I've held sous chef at Meadowood. I held sous chef at Auberge du Soleil, sous chef at Morimoto's, and then executive. I think so Carneros, they offered me the executive sous position. I was like, okay, another baby step towards mm-hmm. the executive position, and the talks were that I would. Perhaps eventually be the executive chef there. So I think the length and time for me to go up the ladder has been like stretched out or exaggerated a little bit mm-hmm. just because I've had to make lateral movements and trying to see what the ultimate goal was for the organization and or myself
right.
in getting to the next level. So it's been rough but I don't know. I'm resilient. I think I'm like built for it.
I do not doubt for a single moment that you are resilient and adaptable and can navigate those waters.
Yeah. So I'm built for it. And I feel that, I mean, who better for it to happen to than myself? Because again, it forces you to tap into your resources. It forces you to look back at yourself as, you know, because in some instances you're like, no, I'm better than this. Or mm-hmm. I'm better than that. Or I'm better than, okay, you're so much better than that person. How come you weren't just a shoo-in for that role? Okay, make yourself better.
Make yourself better.
Yeah. So it's constantly kept me humble, and it's allowed me to, instead of being shooting to the top, wherein a lot of people see, even out of culinary school, a lot of people had this opportunity and they were put it right into this position, mm-hmm. but they don't have any like foundation behind them as mm-hmm. far as culinary. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's allowed me to round myself out completely, become a full chef, and in turn it allows me to offer that to the team that I am building.
Yeah, you bring a level of knowledge and expertise from recognizing that you've had to excel in all of these fields and in all of these different spaces just to be looked at by people as that's the guy for the job.
Yeah.
Do you think that sometimes though that is a result and why you feel like you had to go through all of these lateral changes as opposed to knowing you're well aware of what you bring to the table? Like, we all know when we're well deserving and should be able to access spaces.
Yes.
Do you think that And a lot of conversations are happening right now in the wine industry about diversifying the industry, about equity, and about accessibility. Mm-hmm. Can the same be said about the culinary industry and how Black and brown individuals are treated within that space when it comes to what you bring to the table, maybe the resume that you have built behind you, and yet still not having access to the same opportunities because at the end of the day, you're having to overcome your Blackness or your brownness mm-hmm. first before you can actually get to that same level playing field?
Yes, that's definitely something that we're having to deal with in the industry. I feel that there's some change with it, but I mean, at the same time, you're also dealing with the, you know, women dealing with what they've had to deal with in the industry as well. Mm. I believe that that's probably taking more precedent right now in the industry versus the Black or the brown people being able to, you know, I would say get what you deserve, but
be provided the opportunities to
at least play on the same playing field.
And that's the industry that you feel is prioritizing that, or you feel like that's just the how everybody approaches industry?
I don't think that's just industry. I think that's in other avenues as well, with the challenges of Black and brown people trying to excel in various industries. I believe that a lot of these other, not to take anything away from the movement of the women, which I'm very supportive, but it's the conversation around black people always get distorted by everything else, that whatever other issues, issues that are being placed on the table, mm-hmm. you know, above it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's not just industry wise, but as far as from my experience in the industry, it's definitely been, you know, it's definitely taken
kind of a backseat to other issues.
Yeah. To other issues. Yeah.
Which is interesting to me, because whenever I'm in conversations about these things with, you know, friends or family members and stuff like that, I'm like, the two can exist at the same time. It doesn't have to be one over the other. We can recognize that there is a much needed change for equality from, you know, a feminist standpoint, and recognizing that more women need to be in these fields and everything that comes with that, the sexism, all mm-hmm. of it, everything that's encompassing. And also to recognize that having equity for Black and brown individuals to access these spaces and not feeling like you need to be seven times as more prepared and, mm-hmm. you know, with this incredible backing on your resume for you to just be at the same level playing field as an average white male.
Right. Yeah, that's I think traditionally we haven't been able to. We as the people just haven't been able to attack multiple issues at one time. Or if we are dealing with issues, there's usually something else put in the way to kind of distort the protest, or to distort the idea. And thank you for your words all throughout COVID. Seeing how official you are.
No need to thank me.
Your voice is amazing. Your voice is amazing. But
someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
There's no savior here that's going to come down raining from the heavens, waving a wand and being like, "Thou shall be fixed." Like, and I think the more we can empower people to recognize that power really comes from yourself, and not because you are the chosen one who needs to operate in that field, but in recognizing it takes every random individual, every single person to truly make it happen. And yeah, the work is freaking exhausting. It's exhausting, yes. Which is why I can see why so many people don't stick around to do the work, because it is tired. Because the moment you start to do it, you recognize like, oh crap, this isn't something that I can like do for 6 months while it's all, you know, all the attention is in the media, and then bounce. It's, I'm now in this for the rest of my life. And that's a serious commitment.
Yes. Like, yes, it is.
So thank you for your kind words. It's, to me, it's this whole other conversation that I just get so bored about, because I'm just like, I wish that there were more people. And for me, what was a little disappointing about that was going out there, because I knew it was the right thing to do and someone's got to say something. And to me, it personally bothered me that no one's saying anything. Mm-hmm. and then giving people the opportunity, putting yourself, making yourself in a very vulnerable position to be like, okay, I'm going to be out there if anyone wants to come join. And knowing that on social media, everyone's so quick to retweet, reshare, post something. But when it comes to action, when it comes to truly putting your face out there, which is a very uncomfortable thing to do, but it's not supposed to be comfortable. It's not supposed to be comfortable. It is uncomfortable, actually, to literally put yourself out there. But it's by doing that, and the more people you have behind you, that it feels less lonely. And so when people don't show up, it's almost like, it almost angers me, because then I see what they're doing on social media and I'm like, nah, nah.
your feet were on pavement constantly. Your voice was bellowing. So it constantly took the, when you come across a person like yourself, you just have that weight just come off your shoulders just a little bit more, you know. It gave me motivation to it's like, okay, now I got the extra 10 pounds off my shoulders, you know. So now it's like, go conquer the rest. You need that.
What are you? Thank you. Literally, I'm feel a little speechless now. I'm like, oh my gosh. So we've talked about, you know, challenges that you faced and you've had to navigate as an individual as you've tried to put yourself into this executive chef role. Mm-hmm. What gets you most excited now that you're in that position, now that you're like, oh my gosh, I'm here to look forward to, is like the next thing. What are you specifically inspired to do by now being in this position?
Traditionally, it hasn't been as long as most chefs that, you know, traditionally. My thing has been for the last several years to really give back as far as my knowledge, there's a lot of issues going on just within our industry as far as just being able to pass down the knowledge. And some of the people that are just coming out of school, they feel that they should be granted like a head chef position. Mm-hmm. We just need to pass down the knowledge there. Using my vocation to supplement something else is just trying to go towards trying to solidify my like nonprofit, and maybe offering this going through the motions of offering like fine dining. Or something close to it, to the hungry. I've worked with a few nonprofits using my culinary backing to do it. I'd like to just offer more. I don't see much benefit to the career if you're not giving back or just being a person.
I love that.
Yeah.
I always get really emotional when I hear people say that, because I think it truly speaks to an individual. Because there's a lot of people out there, not necessarily bad people, still good people, who don't keep that at the top of their mind. You know, they're perfectly fine with recognizing their own struggles, which I'm sure we all face.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, being happy that they finally got into position where they are and just working through and cruising through the rest of their life like that. But when I hear people talk about their successes and what they've built for themselves, but at the end of that, there's always, and I also want to think about the next incoming generation or how I can help influence given the position that I'm in. Mm-hmm. I think that is where the beauty truly lies, because that was the dream, right? You think about your parents and wanting to instill, looking back, and I can relate because I'm a first generation American. Mm-hmm. And I think back to my parents' sacrifices, and I don't know if it's because of what I saw them go through that I innately feel like I need to figure out how then can I do that? Maybe not with my own children, but, you know, at the at large community, how can I spread that wealth of knowledge to provide a little bit more to people who might not have that access to hear other people, especially someone like yourself doing that? I just always think is the most beautiful part about all of our successes in those stories, because it's, you can be super successful, but personally in my mind, if you don't turn around and try to uplift people with you,
none of it matters.
What was your impact?
What was your impact on people? Yeah. How did you make them feel?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's everything.
What? Everything. So I'm curious, what is the name of your nonprofit organization? This is the first I'm hearing about this.
Well, it's out of the name of it's called Out of Necessity.
Very fitting.
Yes, yes. A lot of it was based in the initial base thought behind building it. I'm still building it. It's not an official organization yet, but I've done collaborations with other companies with the use of the name. So Out of Necessity was kind of like the birth child. Was like, I'd always, you know, like, you know, again, growing up and going back and forth home to Jamaica, I just saw that, like, it was traditional that, you know, you travel with one suitcase was for your clothing, one suitcase was you're going to be leaving everything. Anything that you travel with, and that was before when, you know, you're able to actually have two big 50-pound suitcases, right? All that stuff gets left for the family or the neighborhood, whatever.
Whatever they need.
So no matter what,
toothpaste, lotion,
everything.
Chapstick, things that we take for granted here that we don't recognize. It's like those simple things that people just don't have access to.
The only thing that you may come back with in your suit, I mean, you have two suitcases that are completely full. And again, a lot of people now, they won't realize, I used to be able to travel with that much, you know, that much luggage. Yes. You'd come back with maybe like a hidden avocado, trying to get through customs, you know, because the Caribbean avocado is different, right? The avocado and, goodness, maybe the clothes that you're wearing, you know, and maybe some Jamaican rum or something like that. That you're going to, yes. So, yeah, but yeah, you'd go and you just leave everything there. So, I mean, and then noticing, like, when growing up in the States and being able to go back there and seeing the complete difference in how people are living. And a lot of people, even to this day, don't realize Jamaica is still a third world country. And so that was the birth child of it. I was like, I need to feed my people. But then when I realized that, because like the West Coast has always been like so far from most of like my family's roots, like Jamaican, Trinidad. So if I don't have the capabilities of actually like doing that on a large scale, I could do it locally. People in Napa Valley have supported me. People in Northern California, East Bay, South Bay, North Bay have all supported my my path, my career goals. And I was like, I could give back locally and still do that on a larger scale as it grows. So I'm trying to grow that. And you know, of course, you know, we as chefs generally we're working 16-hour days.
Crazy
so,
hours.
And so just trying to find time to make that official is something that's, you know, up there in the top five
on the to-do list.
Yeah, amongst like recipe books and children's books. It's
and
like
all
I have
goals.
My everything like started, but I just need to just push forward and get through it.
Yeah, and you will, just like you have everything else. And if there's anyone tuning in that can help out with some of this information, whether it's a contact or you personally know someone that can help officialize the nonprofit, like this is what this is for. This is for connectivity. This is for highlighting incredible people doing the work like yourself. And so it's so great being able to sit here with you after years, what feels like years.
I know, right?
And just learning about everything that you've been up to. And you were just such a phenomenal individual. And I'm excited for when those books come out because your cuisine is amazing.
Thank you.
Talk to me a little bit about what inspired, because I know you take your roots, but you make it your own, given also like what you've learned about culinary and French cuisine, because I know that's you like to say that you're like this modern French cuisine. what was it like trying to build up your own flavor profile and what did that look like?
I think, you know what, you end up doing a lot of the flavor profile building is done more during the family meals. Family meals, for the people that don't know, is just when the restaurant staff feed the restaurant staff, or, you know, the kitchen, like there's maybe one or two designated times during the day where the kitchen feeds either lunch or dinner to all of the staff. So during that time is when I'm usually, you know, doing the Jamaican food or that type of thing. So I have, you know, the plantain, or most people know it as plantain, but it's plantain, curry chicken or jerk chicken and rice and peas. And so you notice, and like, cause early on, again, like what plays into my mind is that how my family had always thought that maybe there was no career in culinary as far as being a chef, because it was, again, there's always like blue collar. So like going into the kitchens, going into like the professional kitchens, I didn't think that people would be would receive these the flavor profiles. Mm-hmm. To a West Indian, it's like if anybody serves you a piece of protein and is like not really like inundated with like a seasoning, it's not seasoned. It's the things, it's not seasoned. Mm-hmm. And so what I learned through by way of my culture is to how to properly season. And there's a lot of herbs and a lot of spices that weren't familiar to, the American palate. And so as I'm doing like these family meals and people, you know, then chef will say, why don't you put that thing, or whatever that specific item is on the menu, or add that to this profile, or add that to this dish. And I'm like, oh, okay. And the taste is like, we never tasted this before. I'm like, but you guys have the same ingredients right there, but you don't know how to manipulate it. Mm. I wouldn't say the manipulate part.
Right.
I'm not gonna say that to a chef, but we have the same ingredients right there. Everything's right there.
You're like, you can craft this. It's just not.
Yes. But I was taught how to actually work with these ingredients. And it's something I criticize a few chefs these days, even when I see them not working with an ingredient properly, or at least not bringing it to its fullest potential. Mm-hmm. Actually going from like the family meal, then in some instances you're doing an amuse, and people are like, oh, what is that? Is that on the menu? No, that's just, you know, that's just a little something for your palate until you wait for the rest of your French dishes. Like, for example, like when I'm at Auberge, so I'll do a lot of amuses. Or when I get the call to, oh, we have a vegan or vegetarian, or we have someone with celiac disease.
People usually hate me.
Yeah, hurt.
Yeah, but that, they're but like, that's the complicated girl.
But every time I get, but that's what kind of like molded me, because that's when like you generally in kitchens when you have a person that comes in with celiac disease, or
you're like, why'd you come out and eat?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Stay home.
You can just go home and just order. And you hear all the, you know, the cooks with their little, you know, saying, oh, you know, why, well, you know, why did they even come out? They could have just stayed home. Blah 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 blah. I was like, no, it's your time to shine. So whenever there was like something like. Because whenever it's like something not ABC, whenever it's something that's not like just like the typical, okay, fire duck, fire fish, fire this, everybody's like, is up in arms. I'm like, whoa, no, that's your time to shine. So that's when so in most kitchens, I start getting the shoulder tap from the chef. We have a group of four celiac disease. Go. Now it's like, you're not only having to sit there and cook your regular, 400 reservation dinner at Morimoto, but Chef Sean, go make a dish that's suitable for
a celiac person, yeah. And all the allergies that come with that, and the prep work that comes with that.
In the middle of everything else. Yeah. So go. Go.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And I'll stop eating out now to help everyone else out.
No. That's what makes it, because if it's typical, why do it?
Very true.
Why do it? If it's just the normal run of the mill, why do it? So that's when I was able to kind of separate myself from a few others. Like, why don't you do this? Some people just always have their like typical, oh, we have a vegan, get the puff pastry out the freezer, or a vegetarian, we have a puff, you know, get your puff pastry out the freezer type thing and fill it with a mushroom, whatever it is that they're going to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you're able to create.
Just
right
have
there.
To be creative.
And, yeah. And that was me wanting to create for family meal, being willing to create for any of the special meals when a guest comes to visit you. I think that helped hone my craft because it wasn't just the everyday. You know, we weren't just doing
rinse and repeat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then eventually I made, you know, so now I'm honing these. What I tell people a lot of what I prepare, if I'm cooking for you individually, I'm just cooking a refined version of what my granny and my mom told me, she taught me. It really is. That's what culinary school, that's where culinary school got me. It's like, oh, just show me how to refine this sauce.
Take it back to your
roots.
Same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not gonna give you the same flavor profile and just have it refined a little bit. And that's where I kind of was like, okay, I need to hold on to that because, you know, culture and experience kind of is going to be the only thing that kind of like separates me from the person right next to me. Mm-hmm. And it's afforded me opportunities and it's allowed me to really stand out in certain circles.
Yeah. And get all of the accolades that you have.
Definitely.
And now one of which you're currently up in the running for, right?
Oh, yes,
Bon Appetit magazine.
Oh, goodness.
Talk to me about that. We need to make sure everyone goes and votes. But first they might be like, cook me something in order for me to make sure I'm voting.
Well, I'd have to cook for a lot of people. I think there's, you know, we're in the semifinal position right now. I think by the, you have to vote for me through the end of Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific.
Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Do I give my Instagram or to give them the?
Yeah.
Yeah. Instagram, Mr. Street, MR.STREETE. There's a, the link is in my bio. Yeah, please vote till the Thursday at 6 p.m. But yes, right now I believe I'm third in my division. Thank you to everyone supporting and reposting. Bon Appetit magazine would be like a dream to any cook across the board, any cook, any chef. It's just the same thing as like if you're in like Food and Wine magazine. It's everything, you know. It's the truth as far as knowing that you're on the on this stage to where you're able to, where your food is now taking, taking some of the space that your voice, or taking some of the place of your voice, but it's really, you're able to speak through your
food speaks for itself.
Yeah. Definitely.
And receiving, what is the official title that you're going for? Chef of the year?
Favorite chef. So your favorite chef. So you have to vote for your favorite chef, which hopefully would be me.
Yes, and if you haven't had a chance to actually taste his food, don't worry, I'm going to try to convince him to have a little special cooking session out here.
Definitely. Prior to COVID, I was doing a lot of private dining in homes, private chef events in homes. The 4 months just up leading up to COVID, I was able to have a good amount of clientele.
That's amazing.
Of course, you know, with COVID, it kind of had to take the back seat. But right. Yeah, but that's, if you see me do like a lot of posts where you see Sean Anthony and Company, that's my private company, you know, my personal chef consulting company.
Sean Anthony and Company, write it down.
So yes, I'm just trying to, I think. In the end, I'm just, you know, I want to get to a position to where I'm on the stage or to where I have my voice have an impact on people. So I think, yeah. So a lot of times it seems like you're like, it almost seems like you're not, I mean, it doesn't seem like what's the opposite of selfless? It seems like you're
selfish,
but I believe that what I'm doing in the, as far as like the long run is, you'll be able to see what my vision is. You'll be able to see my vision come to bloom.
Absolutely. And I think you've been working on that this entire time that you've been in this space.
Yes.
And it's only going to, I know, continue to rise from here. And that excites me because you are one of the most deserving persons to have that. And
thank you.
And by far not selfish whatsoever. You are one of the most selfless people I've met.
Thank you. Thank you.
No need to thank me. It's you and your personality.
No, but it's the same thing. Like when you deliver if I take a plate of food to your table, it's like for the voice to come from the person, you know, because again, like all of the headache and the hurricane that's happening in the back of the kitchen, none of it means anything until you, that presentation and what that
presentation.
And then you have that person exchange that the energy that you're that you're trying to, you bring. Know, trying to provide. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And your energy is always on point. So even if you haven't tasted his food, still head on over to the link in his bio, Mr.Street. And that's with an E at the end. Mr.Street on Instagram.
Thank you.
You can go ahead and vote for him. And take it from me, he is incredible when it comes to his craft. You're also going to take a look at all the pictures that you're going to see on there and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, which was the exact same words that I had when I visited Farm and for my birthday. And I just remember, you know, you walked over, you're like, don't even order anything on the menu. You're just like, I'm also feeling super bad now that I think about it, because I was with two people who had a lactose problem. One was a vegan and then I had celiac. And I was like, man, I'm really making things complicated.
That's game time. That's game time in the kitchen.
I'm not gonna feel guilty. Now I'm gonna be like, I'm challenging you.
right.
Let's see your craft. This is where it matters most.
That's it. It's game time. It's just, man, nothing else matters. It's like, that reminds me of like, just like, say, when I was up at Auberge and I was speaking to one of my longtime friends the other day, I was like, yeah, most of what I get, my return that I got from my cooks after working the 10, 12 hours there, and they were saying that, okay, chef, we know how to execute the one Michelin star food. we're doing it on repetition on a large scale, and we're executing. Like, good. Okay, we want to do something else. What do you want to do? What about molecular gastronomy? Mm. I was like, oh, and it kind of threw me back because I feel myself like right in the middle. Or like when you hit that sous chef mark, you're dealing with the older chefs that are like, molecular gastronomy, get that out of here. Just cook the steak, you know?
Just cook the steak.
Throw it on the grill. And then, molecular gastronomy, you want to cryovac it, put your aromatics in there with your butter, season it, put in the sous vide for an hour, take it out, pat it dry, sear it, rest it. It's just a completely different approach.
Rest it.
Yeah, rest it. So when you slice into it, your medium rare or whatever temperature you prefer doesn't change temperature after it's bleeding out. Mm. That's a side note, chef note. Rest your meat after you cook it.
Okay.
Rest your meat after you cook it. If it's like a large steak, 6 to 8 minutes, rest it after you cook it.
Don't eat it right away is what you're saying.
Don't eat it right away. Let it rest. Let the blood kind of redistribute amongst its...
Okay.
Or the juices redistribute amongst it.
That's good to know.
Yeah. But
I've clearly been doing it wrong this whole time.
If you enjoy it, that's all that matters. But when we shut down the restaurant, maybe 10, 11 p.m. at night, now my cooks that are like wide-eyed and ready to learn more, I'm pulling them. A lot of companies send me a lot of products to work with and to play with, whether it be equipment, a lot of molecular gastronomy products, because that was my direction when I first got in mm-hmm. into the industry. So I'd clear out my garage and like bring it to the restaurant. So from like 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., 4 or 5 a.m., we're just doing everything else, all the spherification, making the caviar, making the fruit caviar, making gelées. And
this is after you've already pulled your cooking chef.
Yeah, I already did my 12, 14-hour day.
Oh my gosh.
And then now we're going to do, I didn't feel that. I didn't feel like, oh my goodness, I'm putting in another 5 hours.
No, you're excited at the thought of get to play around.
Yeah, which is now we're about to start service. That's what, once we shut everything down, we clear down, we clean everything down, everything's wiped down and shining. We go to the prep area and now we're just.
This is for us.
Oh yeah.
Our learning, our growth.
This is it. This is it.
Our
creativity. I've seen some of the most amazing products developed at that time. Even like I think I have one cook that's no longer a cook. I know that a lot of people are infusing like alcohol into gummy bears and that type of thing. He created it like 6 years ago in the back kitchen. I was like, this is amazing. He's like, yeah, chef, I want to do a fireball. I was like, of course, because fireball gummy bears and gummies and stuff. I was like, are you crazy? I was like, well, we, all culinarians are into heavy drinking. So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Bring in the fireball, bring in this, bring in the gelatin.
Whatever you
bring
want.
The isomalt. Yeah, yeah.
Let's figure it
and
out.
We used to just go, the whole back area would be tore up, and then the morning porter would come in and say, chefs,
what y'all do last night?
Chef's time to go home. Like, no, we're over here doing it. But yeah, so it's, yeah, going back to like giving back and just dealing with people that want to learn. It's amazing. That was like one of the highlights.
I love that. Yeah. And your face lights up when you talk about that.
I try to keep it.
Nah, it's looking good. Don't you worry. Oh my gosh, that is amazing. Mm. So then what, for anybody who, because I know you work through your own, again, you mentioned Into the Wild and how you were trying to figure out, your own position in life and in what you were doing. What's usually the advice that you give to people who are trying to navigate just figuring themselves out or in the culinary space when you have someone coming up to you, who might be starting out and they're looking at you being like, wow, you have all of this phenomenal experience. Like, how do I get there? What's usually your go-to piece of advice that gets you through?
I think I lead with the negatives because, because when I got into the industry, it was like I was inundated by the Le Cordon Bleu commercials. Mm-hmm. I'm a Le Cordon Bleu grad. But that's what kind of like, like when I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do and what I'm going to, for some reason, like right out, right after the bubble burst with the real estate, those commercials were just like on, I think a lot of those like, school type programs were like
a lot of the trade programming.
Yeah, they brought those up all the trade. So I was like, oh, Le Cordon Bleu could be the great executive chef, blah blah blah, leading, cutting edge, blah blah blah. I was like, I didn't have anybody to say otherwise. That to say like, no, that's not. It takes a while. It takes some late nights to get to that point. I think I lead with the negatives, and I probably shouldn't, but I kind of just want to be straight to it because a lot of people, everyone outside of the industry is going to say, oh, that's great. You're a chef. Oh, you're a chef. What do you make today? I made what the executive chef wanted me to make. It's not, Yeah. I'm learning how to execute. I need to know how to make a bechamel or a hollandaise. You know, I leave with a negative. I was like, okay, how's your home life? Mm. That's, you know, are you willing to sacrifice whatever it is that you have going on at home? Do you have children? So I think I lead by asking. I ask a lot of questions.
Tougher questions.
Because you're gonna have to eventually in the career you're gonna have to face it.
Sacrifices.
Yeah, the sacrifice. What are you willing to give up? Are you willing to give up everything? There's no halfway of doing or fulfilling your needs in this career. I remember, I'm not gonna say which place, but I remember one place that I had worked. The actual start time was 8 o'clock. I mean, like, you know, if you go into work and you clock in 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. I think you're scheduled from maybe 8 to 1. But if you take a step onto the property any later than 2 hours prior to your start service.
And 2 hours prior?
2 hours prior, you're not going to be ready for service.
So you'd be there at 6?
6:30. If you don't remember to clock in, you're not going to get paid. But in the, during this, during the, from 6 to maybe 4 p.m., you're literally running. I was half the size that I am now. Because, you know, as you go up the ladder, you become a fatter chef, right?
But
I'm saying there's always I've always seen like the memes where like you have the extern super skinny, mm-hmm. and the line cook a little bit bigger, the sous chef a little bit bigger, the executive chef just big,
enormous.
yeah, because you're not doing as much running generally. Generally, but from that, yeah, that place I was running from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. And if I was lucky enough to remember to clock in, I'm going to get paid.
Oh my gosh.
But I learned more than anything during that time, the time I was there. Yeah. So you have to know the amount of, first off, you have to know which, because there's different industries within this industry. Mm-hmm. There's the Michelin, there's the bigger avenue in the middle where it's just general. There's banquets. Mm-hmm. There's I call it now extreme hotels, like big food service, like, mm-hmm. if you're like Vegas or, mm-hmm. or working abroad, you have to define what it is that you want. I'm telling the cooks, you have to define what it is that you want and what are you willing to risk for it. Mm. Otherwise, you should probably think about doing something else. As much as you know you need, a lot of people refer to the next person. As much as you need this body or this person. I think you have an obligation to tell them what you're
getting into.
What you're really getting into. Yeah.
I'm sure you've had to do your own fair share of sacrifices. Oh,
definitely.
Are you happy though?
Still seeking.
Still seeking.
I'm not. Goodness, no one's ever asked me if I'm happy.
Because
people usually say, are you happy? It looks like you're happy because your food looks amazing. I was like, my food is really an expression of whatever it is I'm feeling at that point. So it may look amazing on the visual, but I could tell you like the reason why this is plated there. This is plated at 10 o'clock. This is plated and this is pushed over to like 3:30. Or, you know, I could tell you the reason. So it's very, that's why I said earlier, like I'm almost like in the space of always just associate myself with being a chef, or I'll say like I'm a cook, or I'll say I'm an artist, because I feel it's very expressive.
It is.
Yeah, it's very expressive and it allows you to get away as well.
You can pour your emotions into it.
Yeah. And then it's just like, that's, I've always said, I was like, I don't, even though your end result should all, you know, in the food industry is like, okay, you want your guests to be happy. But I think with me, it's hard to like really say without sounding so like abrupt. My concern isn't so much that the happiness is surrounding it. I want the emotion, whether it be good or bad. So I like the good or bad feedback. Oh, I didn't like this. And then now we're speaking. Okay, the reason why this is there, because I was pissed off at this my prep cook. My prep cook either poached that a little too long or under it, or I wasn't feeling good about this. You know, my great grandma passed away. And it's like there's like so much that goes into the plate, more than just like, oh, that looks great.
Yeah.
Like that's like someone's perception.
Everything has its own purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like I'm like in that space. I'm in that space, you know? So it's like, I try to think about like, hey, what's next? I want to come back and be an exec chef in a Michelin star situation in Napa Valley.
Is that what's next?
That's
is that
next on your goal? Always on my mind. Like I said, I love Napa Valley. It's
I don't mind you being in Mill Valley, but I would love you being back here in Napa.
Mill Valley has embraced me open arms. Open arms.
Good.
Open arms. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of love there. Yeah, they reciprocated the love, and even like the one of the biggest farmers market, the Marin County Farmers Market is. Even like when I worked out here, that was like the weekly field trip. We'd go to that farmer's market. That was like the farmer's market, the AIM farmer's market, I believe mm-hmm. it is out there. And they're just amazing. All of the chefs are getting there early in the morning, sabotaging the next chefs. they'll buy out the whole block of like say zucchini and just like have the
only I get zucchini.
Yeah, and they'll leave it on display, and then they'll you know you'll hear them say, oh, tell such and such chef that I already got those.
Oh, because
everybody's buying seasonal. You know, everybody's you know hyper seasonal and really trying to show off the bounty and the produce of Northern California, and that's one of the locations where everywhere you can find everyone.
Well, I love that you've been embraced in Mill Valley, but I would definitely not mind seeing your face around these parts.
Yeah, we'll see where
life takes us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, I know that you have nothing but good things in your cards. Whatever, it doesn't mean there's not gonna be challenges, because I'm a firm believer that even through those challenges, whatever you're doing, as long as you're putting that foot forward, it's not leading you anywhere bad.
Right.
So I'm excited to keep watching that journey. I'm going to need to get out to Mill Valley and out to the Gravity Tavern. but I'm more than anything, I'm more excited to just continue to see your growth and everything that comes from here as a chef, as an artist, and most definitely as someone who is trying to pioneer just sprinkling in a little bit of that goodness back with your nonprofit organization.
Thank you. Extremely thankful for your support. It's
no, thank you. And everyone, again, you know, he is up right now for being voted as your favorite chef, Bon Appetit magazine. You've got to go check it out. I'm actually going to put the link in our bio, so make sure you can also access that through the Big Sip series. But you can also definitely head on over to Sean's Instagram page. That is Mr.Street with an E at the end on Instagram. Make sure you get it right. You can go ahead and vote. You've got till 6 p.m. Yes. to make sure you are getting it done.
Thank you.
Cheers to you. Thank you so much for joining me. Salud.
Salud.
The Big Sip.